Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to BCE Q2 2016 results conference call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Thane Fotopoulos. Please go ahead, Mr. Fotopoulos.
Thank you, Valerie, and good morning to all. As usual, joining me here today are George Cope, BCE's President and CEO, as well as Glen LeBlanc, our CFO. As a reminder, our Q2 results package and other disclosure documents, including today's slide presentation, are available on BCE's investor relations webpage. An audio replay and transcript of the call will also be made available on our website later today or tomorrow. However, before we get started, I'd like to draw your attention to our safe harbor statement on slide two. Information in this presentation and remarks made by the speakers today will contain statements about expected future events and financial results that are forward-looking and therefore subject to risks and uncertainties. These forward-looking statements represent our expectations as of today and accordingly are subject to change. Results may differ materially. We disclaim any obligation to update forward-looking statements except as required by law. A discussion of factors that may affect future results is contained in BCE's filings with both the Canadian Securities Commissions and the SEC and are also available on our corporate website. With that, over to George for review of the results.
Great. Thanks, Thane. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I'm on slide four of the presentation. In terms of the quarter, 113,000 wireless and wireline broadband net customer additions, obviously consistent with this type of quarter where you traditionally see softer on the internet side with the school outs at the end of the quarter. Overall, at 113,000, we know we would have taken market share in the broadband space. We had exceptional wireless financial performance with 7.7% growth in EBITDA, a strong revenue flow-through driving a 1.4% increase in service margin to 48%. Importantly, it was the eighth consecutive quarter of positive wireline adjusted EBITDA growth with a 1.1% increase in our margin to 42.7%, giving us ample room to make the necessary capital investments in fiber going forward. We had a strong overall contribution from Bell Media, with revenue up 5.3%, driving EBITDA growth of 3.7%. All three groups again delivering positive EBITDA growth. Independent surveys continue to highlight our network leadership, both from a wireless perspective and our Fibe TV, both in the surveys identifying Bell as the leader in network on both those products. Overall, service revenue increased 1.3%, and that combined with our focus on profitable subscriber growth and cost management delivered 3.2% higher EBITDA and an increase in our margin to 42.5%. Our steady execution of the company continues. That is the 41st consecutive quarter of year-over-year EBITDA growth for our investors. Turning to wireless results, very strong results, both financially and from a net add perspective. 70,000 postpaid net adds, up 14.4% year-over-year. A reduction in our churn across the base. A continual increase in our average revenue per unit as customers migrate to the LTE Advanced network and use the handsets more. We did see a tick up in the cost of acquisition, principally driven by, again, the higher mix of smartphones and also a weaker Canadian dollar. Retention spending was down to 11.9% of service revenue, and that's quite positive given churn was reduced as well. Of course, we lapped the double cohort. Overall, as I said, excellent performance driving increasing market share with postpaid net adds growing, a lower churn, 7.7% increase in EBITDA. I think notable in the quarter is our ability to grow both subscribers and EBITDA growth, which has been quite different than some of our peers in recent quarters. On the wireline side, 43,000 IPTV and internet adds in the quarter, 35,000 IPTV net adds. Certainly was not a strong promotional quarter in Quebec as it was last year, and with the minimal footprint expansion, 35.3 net adds would be consistent with the footprint that we now have today. Satellite losses improved slightly. Importantly, in our footprint itself, we added 10,200 overall TV net adds. So clearly the losses of satellite continue to be more outside our traditional wireline footprint. 7,500 internet net adds in the quarter. Really two issues. We saw a decline in our wholesale net adds of about 10,000 year over year. And of course the revenue off of that sub base is about 45% or 40% of our retail revenue. So not significant from a financial perspective. And also we chose not to match some of the aggressive pricing we saw in the market in Toronto from one of our competitors and continue our focus on profitable subscriber growth. And as you can see, we're leading in broadband share between our internet and TV net adds. Remarkably, a significant improvement in our NAS losses of 24,000 year over year. So heading in the right direction there. Of course, that will continue to see a decline in NAS though as we go forward. Strategically, we just launched the Virgin Home Internet product on July 5th in Ontario, and that will be focused on the discount internet market on the wireline side. Also want to announce a couple new products this morning that we're really quite proud of that we'll launch in August. First of all, we are launching, to our knowledge, the first fully wireless IPTV service. So we had had one set-top box, or if you will, the PVR, that was not wireless. It now is, and to our knowledge, the only all-wireless IPTV service globally available. It will be launched this month and also clearly reduces some of our install time, provides remarkable flexibility for our customers. It also will integrate the 4K Netflix app into this 4K PVR, making it available on all five TV receivers that we now have in the marketplace. So we continue to maintain our leadership position with IPTV with these unique products in the marketplace. Just importantly, on the broadband side, on the next page is the launch of a Home Hub 3000 modem. It's by far the strongest modem we have ever launched. It'll have three times the Wi-Fi power that we currently have in the marketplace. It will be compatible with both FTTN and FTTH. It launches in August. Importantly, reduces for our fiber install what is currently five different pieces of hardware down to one, all integrated into this one modem. It will reduce our install time at least 30 minutes and also reducing the devices from five to one. Overall, we expect our demand capital requirements for fiber to drop anywhere from 10 to 12% as a result of this new modem. And also, we believe it will be for sure the strongest modem and improve access in the home for all of our customers. We're also going to move forward with installing a fiber jack when we install fiber into all condominiums and homes now as we go forward so that that fiber service remains there for the life of the actual premise as opposed to the life of the customer. And so it will simply be a self-install after that as the second owner of that property would move in as we go forward, setting up for a really quite a remarkable cost structure when we go forward over the years. Turning to Bell Media, as I mentioned, a strong quarter, both revenue and EBITDA. Finished the year, CTV again as the number one in Canada with 14 of the top 20 programs and 7 of the top 10 series. We have a very strong lineup leading into the fall season. And we also just, on our out-of-home business, were recently awarded the Toronto Pearson Airport contract, which basically puts the company as the, now we believe, the largest outdoor advertising company in the country. So really takes us to 6 different airports across the country, driving our ability to sell consolidated advertising to our clients across all of our platforms, radio, TV, and outdoor. Turning to MTS, just a quick update for everyone. The shareholder approval was took place on June 23rd with literally almost 100% of votes cast in favor. Court approval was received June 29th. We're in the midst of the regulatory process, and we expect closing in either late this year or early 2017. And with that, let me turn it over to Glenn. Thank you.
Thanks, George, and good morning, everyone. I'll begin with a quick summary of Q2 financials on slide 12. Our consolidated results for the quarter demonstrate a clear focus on subscriber profitability and price discipline, as highlighted by our continued steady service revenue and adjusted EBITDA growth, margin expansion, and higher earnings and free cash flow, all of which are consistent with the guidance targets we provided at the beginning of this year. Total service revenue increased 1.3%, led by the strong top-line performance of Bell Wireless and Bell Media, as well as higher internet and TV revenues. Product revenue was down $49 million, or 12.3% year-over-year, due to fewer wireless customer upgrades as the double cohort was lapped at the beginning of June, lower mobile device pricing, and reduced sales of wireline business data equipment. Adjusted EBITDA increased a very solid 3.2%, reflecting positive year-over-year growth, as George mentioned, in all three operating segments. This drove a 1.2 percentage point improvement in overall margins to 42.5% on the back of a tremendous service revenue flow through to EBITDA of 113%. That was driven by solid wireless ARPU growth, higher revenue per household, and a 1.8% reduction in total consolidated operating costs. Given our highly competitive markets, we continue to exercise good spending and pricing discipline across all of our customer and product segments. Higher EBITDA drove 8% growth in adjusted EPS to 94 cents from 87 cents last year and was also a key contributor to the free cash flow generation of $934 million this quarter, even with the seasonal step up in CapEx typical of the busy Q2 summer construction period. Consistent with our plan for the year, CapEx spending this quarter increased year over year as we continue to expand both our broadband fiber footprint as well as our internet and wireless network capacity to support customer and usage growth. With that overview, let's turn to the detailed results of wireless segment you'll find on slide 13. Not much in the way of extension commentary from me required for Bell Wireless, as our strong financial performance truly speaks for itself. Service revenue increased 4.6%, driven by higher LTE data usage and a greater percentage of customers on two-year contracts, while product revenue was down 23.5%, primarily on a lower volume of handset upgrades, as I mentioned previously, which contributed to a 1.7% reduction in wireless operating costs this quarter. From a profitability perspective, wireless adjusted EBITDA grew an exceptional 7.7%, yielding a revenue flow through to EBITDA of 77% and an impressive 1.4 percentage point improvement in margin to 48%. And lastly, wireless adjusted EBITDA less CapEx, or what is referred to in the industry as simple free cash flow, provided a very strong contribution to BCE's overall cash generation in Q2, increasing 11.3% year-over-year to $589 million. So overall, another great set of financial results in what's now been a long line of excellent quarters for Bell Wireless. Moving to Bell Wireline on slide 14, the pace of wireline revenue decline was directionally similar to Q1, decreasing 2.1% this quarter. Overall top-line performance was impacted by the sale of a contact center subsidiary in September of 2015, reduced spending on service solutions and data products by our large enterprise customers, as well as softer wholesale revenues attributed to competitive pricing pressure and a higher volume of off-net traffic compared to last year. Excluding the $15 million revenue loss from the call center sale I just referenced, we generated positive residential service revenue growth of 0.5% in Q2. This was driven by continued solid internet and TV growth, which combined delivered 5.2% year-over-year increase in revenue. In our business markets unit, although the rate of EBITDA decline improved as a result of the cost management initiatives, overall revenue performance continued to be impacted by customer repricing demands and a slower pace of new business investment. Wireline adjusted EBITDA was up 0.6%, or as George said earlier, our eighth consecutive quarter of positive year-over-year growth, while margin expanded 1.1 points to 42.7%. Certainly worth repeating. This reflected a 4% decline in operating costs from ongoing spending controls and service improvement efficiencies, including workforce reductions undertaken in the fourth quarter of last year. Turning to slide 15, Bell Media contributed positively to the overall consolidated BCE adjusted EBITDA and cash flow growth this quarter, with a strong set of financial results that were underpinned by industry-leading TV audience ratings and viewership levels. Total revenue grew 5.3% year-over-year, mainly on the strength of subscriber revenues and year-over-year growth at Astral Out of Home. Subscriber revenues were up 13%, driven much like they were in Q1 by the expansion of the movie network into Western Canada, as well as the continued steady Crave TV and TV Everywhere growth. Although advertising demand for conventional TV and radio remains soft across most sectors, total advertising revenue was up 0.3% in Q2. This growth was driven by the higher audience levels for TSN and RDS, given the Toronto Raptors' deep playoff run, Euro Cup soccer, and some shift in spending to Bell Media's specialty sports properties, with no Canadian NHL teams advancing to postseason play. Adjusted EBITDA increased 3.7% on the flow-through of the higher revenue, as well as the workforce restructuring labor savings that effectively offset year-over-year increases in sports broadcast rights and Crave TV content costs. Overall, Bell Media's performance in 2016 is meeting all of our expectations, in both in terms of financial performance, with two consecutive quarters of positive revenue, adjusted EBITDA, and free cash flow, and in terms of the strategic opportunities to improve the growth profile of Bell. Slide 16 summarizes our adjusted EPS for Q2, which was 94 cents per share, or 8% higher year over year. EBITDA accounted for 6 cents of the EPS growth in the quarter. Lower net interest expense due to lower average cost of debt and mark-to-market gains on our equity derivative contracts, driven by BCE's share price appreciation in the quarter, also contributed to higher adjusted EPS. This was partly offset by our year-over-year depreciation expense, consistent with a higher capital asset base, as well as no favorable tax provision adjustments compared to the 1 cent per share we recorded last year. Additionally, overall EPS growth in Q2 was moderated by a higher share count due to the $863 million equity issuance we did last December, which, just like last quarter, resulted in a dilution of approximately 3 cents per share. With our strong Q2 performance, year-to-date adjusted EPS is up 4.7% over last year, keeping us on track to achieve our full-year 2016 guidance objective for growth of approximately 3 to 6%. Turning to free cash flow on slide 17, consistent with our plan for Q2, we generated $934 million of total cash, driven primarily by growth in adjusted EBITDA. Free cash flow this quarter also reflected the benefits of lower interest paid, lower cash pension, and lower cash taxes. Although cash pension and cash taxes decreased year over year, this was due primarily to the timing of payments and therefore continue to track in line with our full-year guidance assumptions. CapEx was 3.9% higher year over year, reflecting higher planned spending, as I discussed earlier. But even with the step up in spending in the quarter, we continue to track comfortably towards our 17% capital intensity target for 2016. And lastly, a decrease in our working capital position related mainly to the timing of supplier payments also moderated overall free cash flow growth in the quarter. To wrap up on slide 18, looking ahead, with the financial performance we reported in the first half of 2016, all of our operating segments are tracking well to deliver on the guidance targets that we provided back in February. We see good operating momentum taking us forward in the second half of the year, and we remain confident in our ability to execute and grow the overall business with a continued expectation for positive wireless, wireline, and media adjusted EBITDA growth for the full year of 2016. As well as an accelerating free cash flow trajectory in the back half of the year that fully supports higher planned capital spending within the capital intensity level I mentioned of around 17%. All of this providing a solid, strong foundation for continued execution of our dividend growth objective in 2017. With that, thanks to everyone for joining us today on the call, and I will turn the call back over to Thane and the operator to begin the Q&A period.
Thanks, Glenn. So before we start the Q&A period, just keep the call as efficient as possible. I ask that you limit yourselves to one question and a brief follow-up. To the extent we have time, we'll circle back at the end of the queue and take more questions. So with that, Valerie, we're ready to take our first question.
Thank you, Mr. Katopoulos. We will now take questions from telephone lines. If you have a question and you're using a speakerphone, please lift your hands up before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If at any time you wish to cancel your question, please press the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause for the participants to register for questions. Thank you for your patience. Our first question is from Richard Choi with J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Great, thank you. Another strong term performance in the quarter of 1.15%. Can you give us a sense of what is driving the low churn rate? Is it that customers are just not as active, or is it something you're doing on your side?
Yeah, well, our belief is it's really a number of core things. First of all, you know, again, it's the third, I think, survey in the last 12 months by independent agencies saying that our network is the superior network in Canada, and so obviously superior network drives a lower churn rate. That's clearly what we're seeing. I think secondly, you know, our customer service metrics continue to improve fairly significantly, so that is clearly driving it. And I think thirdly, structurally in the industry, the fact that we've now lapped the double cohort, there's some math that clearly would help us drive that churn to be lower as well. And I think those are really the three drivers.
And then in areas where you have LTE advanced coverage, are you seeing a pickup in usage versus LTE, or is it relatively the same?
No, we're seeing an increase in usage when folks move to LTE advanced. And if I don't have it, Thane will certainly share it with you after the call. But we definitely are seeing usage increase. About 40% higher is what Thane's just told me, the difference, as people are moving to. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Simon Flannery with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning. George, I wonder if you could just give us an update on the fiber rollout. You know, where are you in terms of your projections? And what are you seeing from customers in terms of your take rates? There's a lot more talk about, you know, the need for speed and, you know, 100 megs being sort of table stakes here. So anything, any color you could give about what people are really responding to, how your new ads are, you know, what sort of speeds they're taking and how you see that evolving. Thank you.
Yeah, so we're at 2.6 million premises that have access to fiber today in our total footprint. We'll end at around 3 million at the end of the year. The significant part of the particular project in Toronto, 416, we'll have an enormous amount of household additions, clearly in 2017 as we've laid the foundation in 16 in the marketplace. We've heard different commentaries about 100. It's funny, we see huge demand at 50 still in our base. Obviously, at the 1 gig service, we see demand there. A lot of very positive results where we have the fiber in terms of net adds. One of the things we think we saw some migration to some of the other speeds that one of our competitors was talking about is that is where they were offering unlimited internet without billing for access. So that would drive customers to that particular tier, not necessarily driven by the speed. And so that's one of the competitive differences you see off and on in different promotions in the marketplace. But there's no doubt where we have IPTV and where we have fibers where we see the best market share growth for us.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Aravinda Galapta with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. George, I just want to focus a little bit on the Ontario market in wireline. Obviously, elevated levels of competitive intensity. Can you just talk about what's going on in terms of internet and TV? Is it that are you seeing an uptick in churn there, or is it simply that the gross ads are kind of a little bit tougher to come by, particularly in internet, given sort of the promotional offers that are out there?
Yeah, sure. And it would probably, it wouldn't even be specifically Ontario, would probably be fair to say in the core market with one of our competitors where we saw some aggressive pricing in the marketplace. And ultimately, that probably causes some switching between the two carriers. And we think we saw some of that in the quarter. Having said that, we continue to drive product differentiation instead of pricing in our approach. We have vastly superior TV product. That's why we saw the 35,000 or so net adds on the IPTV. And where we have IPTV combined with our internet is where we are positive RGUs quarter over quarter. So we continue to be pleased there. And I think it's important for investors to understand that 10,000 of the reduction in the internet was wholesale, and the wholesale obviously revenue stream is much less for us, and clearly that's not a focus of ours because our focus is on bringing IPTV and then at the same time pulling the internet through. But clearly we saw some aggressive pricing in the Toronto market.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Greg McDonald with Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Thank you and good morning, guys. Wanted to ask a question on the wholesale side of internet. George, you mentioned about 10,000 of the impact was on wholesale. Was that an unusual number? Are you losing wholesale customers in previous quarters? Would that suggest that we should see a bounce back in the 3Q? And then I have kind of a follow-on on satellite, just trends there.
Yeah. Wholesale is kind of a hard one, to be honest with you. It is fairly volatile. It does seem to move because wholesalers can move between carriers. We have seen some volatility on that. And, you know, our core focus is obviously on the retail business. We also, as you would have noticed, have just launched the Virgin brand in the Ontario marketplace to focus on the discount market. Of internet, that'll be a brand that we'll carry into the marketplace there, like we did in the wireless world. I think you saw one of our competitors as well do that with one of their brands. So I think you'll see us focusing, and then that would become a retail for us. So we'll compete in that space as well. It's a hard one to know from quarter to quarter what's going to happen there.
But from your overall planning perspective, a sub 10,000 a quarter number is not a usual number. We should be thinking higher than that.
Actually, I didn't give that actual number. I just said the reduction was 10,000. So it's a hard one to give you complete guidance on because it is volatile in the numbers. In terms of our revenue streams, you know, our core revenue streams obviously come from our retail internet and our retail TV,
okay,
which is really what ultimately is driving the company.
Got it. And on the TV side, I think we have a decent understanding of IPTV and the trends there based on the build-outs. What I'm trying to figure out is you still have a little over 1.4 million satellite customers. I'm trying to figure out mix of the customers that are in urban-type markets that might rather take a digital product from the wireline side, i.e. Your Fibe product, relative to those that are in more rural markets that don't have the option. You know, 33,000 net losses is kind of the number that most people expected. Is there a support level that we can expect at some point where that number might decline soon relative to the mix that we're probably seeing go away from urban and
yeah, we would think intuitively we would think so. I can't give you a guidance on it, but as this product matures out and the IPTV footprints mature out, clearly the satellite business and a lot of our footprint will be competing against the other satellite operator. And we are working our way through, you're right, exactly that issue, the urban versus rural footprint on satellite in terms of our net ad reduction. But it's not just in our urban markets where we see the reduction. It's also in other urban markets across the country where we'd had satellite before there was IPTV. So that's still working it through. Probably best is, you know, when you look at our numbers, you can see we're 10,000 in our wireline footprint net ads. You can do the math to say how many satellite we obviously would have lost outside of our own footprint. And you're right, the split's the same. And I would say that percent of our base that's in our IPTV footprint obviously just continues to decline. And so at some point there'll be stabilizing, but it's a very hard one for us to make a call on where that will be.
At some point suggest then there's still a relatively large urban satellite.
I didn't say that. You did.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Our next question is from Jeff Fan with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Two quick ones. One, just a clarification first on the subscribers on the wireline side. I think, George, you alluded to customer moving in the second quarter. I'm just wondering on the accounting, maybe for Glenn, when a customer moves in Q2 and then reconnects in Q3, does the customer count as a churn in Q2 and then a net adds in Q3? Just maybe a clarification on that one. And then
that's something I think that one of our competitors in Quebec over the years has talked about, that they take the loss in the 1 month and the addition in the, we don't. The day something deactivates and activates, they're in our numbers. So there's no bridge between quarters for us.
Exactly.
So if they deactivate and reactivate, they're not a churn in Q2?
Correct.
That's correct. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And then just to follow up on the question on pensions, we heard on the MTS call and they gave us some disclosure around their pension deficit. It looks like due to the lower rates, their deficit increased by about three times since the beginning of the year. I'm wondering if you can give us a bit of an update for Bell and whether your free cash flow guidance includes any of the voluntary or special contribution that you may have to make.
Well, good morning, Jeff. As you're absolutely right that we've seen volatility in the interest rate environment, and when you look at it from a solvency deficit, we've seen probably about 11 basis point decline in the discount rate used on our largest plan, the Bell plan. So we're inside of 3% now, and of course you know that that has sizable impacts on the liability, but on the asset side, we generated a 3.6% return in the quarter and 4.7% year to date. So net, where we find ourselves is with a solvency ratio of approximately the same place, about 91% funded. We've stayed around that number, as you know, for some time, north of 90%. As far as future funding of the pension goes, that's a decision we make every year with our excess free cash flow, is what's the best usage of it. And as we approach the year end, if that will be one of the options for us, is to consider using our excess free cash flow to fund the pension. We know it's tax deductible, but it's a decision that's in front of us that we'll make that when the time's right.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. Our next question is from Drew McReynolds with RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. George, just want to focus on just the wireline revenue performance in the quarter. And, you know, I think it was a little worse than what we were expecting, obviously not significantly worse. More big picture, just can you comment on just your visibility on wireline revenues going forward? Obviously a lot of moving parts in the segment. And then my actual question is, you know, over time, you know, are you confident that your cash flow growth from other segments, you know, can offset any emerging pressure in wireline cash flow should that happen due to some revenue pressure? Thank you.
Well, yeah, the end of the question is completely confident in our ability to execute, as we've shown over the years, EBITDA growth on wireline the last couple of years and the free cash flow generation, particularly if you look forward on telco cost models and what we're seeing on the service side and fiber, which is our continual strategy that we've shared with our investors and is seen by the fact that even with those local access line declines, our margins have stayed stable over the last 7 years and, in fact, improved to give us the free cash flow room. In terms of revenue, I mean, Glenn talked about there was definitely some noise in the quarter because of the one-time call center stuff not there. Wholesale, not exactly revenue we're dying to have that was impacted as well. And, of course, the product side, you know, you can see the decline on the wireline number. I don't want to say irrelevant. That's a little harsh, but literally it is on the product side. So overall on wireline service revenue, it's always about internet and TV being enough to offset NAS and any decline we see in business. And that's the work. It's the same work the last few years, and we're confident that we'll continue to balance that. The one math equation for us is over time. As everyone knows, local access line revenue becomes less of a share of our overall weighting in wireline, and that lets us see our way forward to not just see it through cost, but also see some of it through revenue.
Okay, no, that's helpful. And just to follow up, George, just on the NAS improvement in the quarter, I know this bumps around quarter to quarter. Just any additional granularity you want to provide on that?
The only thing I would say is there's no doubt when we launch fiber in a market and we add the IPTV pull through in the internet, we see a slowing of NAS losses simply because households that were triple households versus maybe going to one of our competitors stays. So there's a little more stickiness there, but, you know, I that's not a prediction. The local access lines are not going to continue to decline.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question is from Meyer Yagi with Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my question. George, I wanted to ask you maybe, I'm not trying to, you know, get a guidance on a quarterly basis, but with the negative revenue growth in wireline, do you see it going back to positive? And if you do, when should we expect it to turn positive? I mean, you've done a great job on reducing cost, and EBITDA is growing on the wireline side, but I'm just wondering what your investments you're doing on fiber, when should we expect to have wireline revenue growing on a sustainable basis?
Yeah, well, first of all, residential wireline revenue growth is positive. We've been reporting that on a quarterly basis, and it's a mixed issue against the wholesale and BBM. We're obviously not going to give guidance on, we don't buy any of our BUs, we never have, on revenue. We have a consolidated guidance number, and I think the most important revenue number for our investors is our service revenue growth investment. That's quarter over quarter at 1.3%, and obviously it's a mix of all three of our businesses, and that's how we view the company. But clearly, residential positive, that has to be enough to offset the BBM side of it, the business side, and we're close quarter to quarter, and we just keep working at it. And, of course, ultimately for us, it's the EBITDA flow through that we're seeing because the cost to deliver these wireline services is coming down through technology, and that's allowing us to provide margins that are giving us capital coverage for fiber investments that, quite frankly, at margins that are superior to any of our peers, be it wireline or cable.
Okay, and just on wireless margins, how much of these margins that we're seeing right now are sustainable, or you know, some of it is maybe some gains related to the costs that were incurred last year to for the double cohort? Can you maybe talk a little bit about the margin sustainability on wireless, which was very strong in the quarter?
Yeah, you know, margins are a hard one to predict. At the end of the day, our strategy continues to be the same. We want more than a third of the net adds of postpaid, yet we want more than a disproportionate share of the EBITDA growth, and we're seeing that. We clearly have an execution formula that's finding the right balance, which is customers use our phones more because the network's superior. That drives the usage, which drives the EBITDA flow through. The margins, you know, where they are now, would I be predicting higher margins? No, because it's a very competitive marketplace. So really it's about, you know, managing the revenue and cost structures as we've done in the past. You know, I think for investors, the free cash flow we're generating is clearly excellent growth on a free cash flow perspective, but it's a consolidated business. It's a little bit like the wireline answer. I mean, it's one consolidated P&L, and it's taking that free cash flow and reinvesting in fiber so that our wireline business continues to be in a position to be a leader going forward.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Tim Casey with BMO. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, George. Can we go back to those two new product launches? You mentioned the wireless PVR and then the new Wi-Fi modem. You made a comment that you thought it could have some positive implications for spending. I'm just wondering if you could provide a little more color on those products and then put that comment in context. I'm assuming you'll find other places to spend the money, but just if you could just sort of flush those out a bit. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm smiling. That's a good point. We always do find other places to spend the money. You know, the capital intensity number won't come down because of it. But what is important, particularly on the on both devices, but you take the Home Hub 3000, it really is, you can just, everyone I think can imagine why the install time now will drop, you know, anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes because you go from, can be four or five devices in the home to one. So that combined with the cost of this unit relative to five separate units, we think sees anywhere from a 10 to 12% reduction versus our current demand capital costs or versus, say, what Bell Alliant would have been paying to install fiber the last four or five, 3 or 4 years they've been in the market that we've seen in our Quebec. So that will just help us on demand capital going forward. And we get a little bit of help also in the wireless PVR as well, because again, we don't have to deal with the install through the wall. We simply have to put the device in and then connect it onto the modem. So I think both will take some install costs out. Demand capital, you know, at $700 to $900 a home, you can take the math on that and assume a 10% to 12% reduction on that going forward with this change. And then the thing I'm really excited about it is also putting this Bell 5 jack in the premise. Sets us up for the life of the household, not the life of the customer, which I think is sometimes in the investment models, it should be expected life of the home, not expected life of the customer. And then the other one about the great thing about the modem, it's for FTTH and FTTN, and it has speed capabilities well beyond 1 gig speed. So as speeds go beyond 1 gig, we will not have to change that modem out again until we go to another whole other level of speed, which obviously isn't in this particular modem. So hope that gives you a little more color on it. We're quite, you can tell, very excited about it. We think the modem and the Wi-Fi in the home is going to be a real battleground. We've gone from 3 devices to 12 now connected in the home, and this will dramatically improve that service in the home for everyone, and we think it's a world leader.
Thank you. Our next question is from Robert Peters with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my question. George, just on the strong postpaid net additions, I was wondering if you saw any particular region driving that growth and, you know, if there was any kind of difference inside your wireline footprint versus outside in the quarter.
You know, I'd actually say no. It was pretty consistent across the board. I think it's fair to say we saw a little softer year-over-year in Alberta, and that's for 2 quarters in a row now we've seen that. So I think that would be the one call that I would make. Not maybe as dramatic as some people might think, but clearly it was not a strong quarter in Alberta relative to other places in the country.
Perfect, thank you. And maybe to follow up on the wireless and maybe focus a bit more on the margin side, I know you highlighted they're pretty difficult to predict, but in terms of the retention spend declining in the quarter, you highlighted, I believe, the double cohort being lapped. Was there anything else driving that, or was it all really, should we really all attribute that all to the DC?
Go ahead. Yeah, I'll take that question. When you look at the retention spending decreased about 1%, as we mentioned, in the quarter, down to 11.9%. But yet, device upgrades were down 64,000 in the quarter, and that's the primary driver here that you're seeing. Less promotional intensity in quarters, a little less aggressive compared to what we saw in previous quarters, but ultimately 64,000 less device upgrades.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I don't believe, Valerie, there are any further questions at this time. So with that, we'd like to thank everybody who participated this morning, and, of course, I'll be available throughout the day for any follow-up questions and clarifications. So with that, thank you, and have a great day, everyone.
Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you, gentlemen. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.